fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fantastic Friday to you. What a Friday it is, because it's the start of a long weekend, not just any weekend, but the Labor Day weekend. We're going to kick it off in style on The Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call. 888-914-9149. You can call. You might be on your way to the cottage. Might be on your way to a weekend getaway. Hey, let's spend the weekend together, at least part of it. I'll come along for the journey. 888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me, but not while you're driving. Pull over first. At Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Email, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And as always, as we do every Friday, got to hand it over to Daniel Craig.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
All right, that was me introducing Daniel Craig, introducing the weekend. And speaking of Daniel Craig, lots of people are going to be doing some, getting into some entertainment this weekend. And one thing, I don't know when it comes out. It's coming out soon. I'm pretty excited about this because I'm a huge James Bond fan. And I'm really looking forward to the new Bond movie, No Time to Die, which will finally be released after many COVID-related delays this fall. And there's going to be a new Apple TV series called Being James Bond, starring Daniel Craig. And I hope this is really good. I really do hope this is good. So I'm looking forward to that. And I don't know, maybe you're going to check out some entertainment-related stuff this weekend. Maybe you're going to go to the movie theater. Maybe you're going to go check out Marvel's Shang-Chi, which just came out yesterday, really, like Thursday early opening. Apparently it did pretty well. I think 8.8, how much did it bring in? 8.8 million in Thursday previews. And so far it has a 92% Rotten Tomatoes acceptance rate. So it's certified fresh, as it were. And it's, hey, there's a Canadian who's starring in it, Simu Liu, who is from the TV show on CBC, Kim's Convenience, which has become kind of a cult smash. Awkwafina is in it too. And so it should be interesting. The Marvel films are always good. The DC films I enjoy as well. I just love superhero films. And when it comes to superhero stuff, there actually is, it has a lot in common with our Catholic faith. Now you might kind of say, huh? But by the way, yesterday, a big anniversary, a death anniversary, 48 years ago yesterday. We didn't have time to talk about this yesterday because we were talking about Vatican II and the phones were ringing off the hook. But on September the 2nd, yesterday, it was the 48th anniversary of the passing, the death of J.R.R. Tolkien, the great Catholic fantasy writer who, of course, wrote one of producer Lucas's favorite works, if not his favorite work, The Lord of the Rings. Is it your favorite book, Lucas?
Oh man, I don't know. That's a tough question, but it's definitely up there for sure.
Yeah, it's, and so, you know, he wrote about, you know, a fantasy world, but there's a lot of truth that he put in there, and a lot of truth can be smuggled into these superhero stories as well. And so, actually, there's a really cool couple of essays I was looking at on this front. One by Matthew Heffron, who is an Iraq veteran. He's an attorney. He's a lawyer. Lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. Loves his Catholic faith. He wrote a piece for Voyage Comics about superhero deaths and resurrections. Believe it or not, this happens more often than you might think. In fact, you know, this Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has become so popular, in the DC Universe, we see this time and time again. Here are some significant characters that Matthew Heffron points out have been killed and have been resurrected, as it were. Captain America, Superman, Oliver Queen, also known as the Green Arrow, the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, Ryan Reynolds, another Canadian friend who I don't know. If I did know him, I'd ask him for money because he's got tons of it. Wolverine, Spider-Man, Aquaman, Thor, Jason Todd. You say, who's Jason Todd? Well, he was one of the Robins in the Batman universe. There was Dick Grayson, and later on it was Jason Todd. Anyways, The Flash, Barry Allen, Batman even, Barry Allen and Batman didn't really die, but they were thrown into another plane of reality. They were thought to be dead, and they were replaced by a sidekick for a time. But they eventually came back, too. Do you remember, I don't know if you guys remember, but back in 1992, remember the Death of Superman comic? That was kind of a cultural event. Everybody was talking about it, even in the mainstream media, when Superman was killed by the evil Doomsday. Well, he comes back to life, of course. And J.R.R. Tolkien, the Catholic author of The Lord of the Rings, he wrote an essay really about the fantasy genre and why it's important. So if you're going to the movies this weekend, on this long weekend, if you're going to be, or even just reading The Lord of the Rings or something like that, don't feel bad about that, because we need this. We need legitimate escapes. And J.R.R. Tolkien wrote an essay called On Fairy Stories. And this is really all about the fantasy genre. And in that essay, he basically argues that escape is a legitimate purpose. It's a legitimate purpose. You don't have to feel bad about this. Keep in mind, he was a practicing Catholic. So you don't have to. Yeah, you should definitely read the scriptures. And we definitely encourage that here on Relevant Radio with the Faith Explained program and everything that we talk about here on this show. But escaping from the mundane, the unhealthy, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So here's what he says about this. This is what J.R.R. Tolkien said about this. It's natural to desire to escape, not from life. We're not trying to escape from this world, but from our present time and our self-made misery, end of quote. That's pretty interesting, because life in this world is not the way it should be, because this little thing called sin. So as this guy, Matthew Heffron, writes in his article, the simple escape of spending a few hours in this alternative world, whether it's through a movie or through the pages of a book, this really creates a secondary world, a sub-creation, a different world. And for if a story's really well done, or if a movie's really well done, you kind of buy into it. It has to be somewhat plausible. This alternate world has to be something that you can believe in, so you have this sort of suspension of disbelief. And in order for that to work, it has to have its own rules, its own consistency within that magical world. And we can kind of let ourselves get lost in that for a little while. And so a great example of that is the Marvel universe, where everything's all kind of connected, all the movies are connected, all the characters are connected, and it kind of builds up over time. So, you can watch each movie as a standalone feature, like Shang-Chi this weekend, but it's best if you can watch all the movies. My wife actually is trying to do that. She's trying to go through all the Marvel Universe films in the order in which they're supposed to be watched. You get all the connections. It takes some time to do that. And this is where we can escape into what Tolkien calls literary belief. And he says this, J.R.R. Tolkien said that there are ancient limitations from which these fantasy stories offer a sort of escape. So, for example, the ability to fly. We've all kind of fantasized, at least as kids, about, man, I wish I could fly like Superman. And that was really the tagline of the original Superman film in 1978, directed by Richard Donner, who recently passed away. You'll really believe that a man can fly. And obviously, when we look at modern-day movie making and CGI and some of the stuff that they can do, when you watch 1978 Superman, it's still a great film, still holds up really well. Great actors, Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman. You know, but the special effects were kind of rudimentary compared to the present day. But it was really good at the time. It was an amazing movie. I remember seeing it as a little kid, and I was just blown away by it. And it really took me away to a different place. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If this is resonating with you, give me a call, 888-914-9149. So we all kind of wish we could do that. We wish we could fly. We wish we could, you know, be like Aquaman and swim to the depths of the oceans, to Atlantis or whatever. And so this is really where the idea for a lot of these characters come from. But the one thing that we really want to get away from, the one limitation that we really want to escape from more than anything else, is even more than we want to fly or be able to crawl up walls like Spider-Man, we want to commit the great escape. We want to pull off the great escape, and that is the escape from death. That's what Tolkien talks about. The oldest, he says, the oldest and deepest desire is the desire for the great escape, the escape from death. Now, our friend Holly Ordway, a great friend of the program, we just talked about her the other day, but she just keeps cranking out these incredible articles. She wrote another one about Tolkien. Now, she just came out with a book on J.R.R. Tolkien. And so she's really like deep into this guy's work, not just The Lord of the Rings, but everything else that he did. And she says that, and this came out on wordonfire.org, Holly Ordway said that whenever people ask J.R.R. Tolkien, what was The Lord of the Rings about? This was his answer. He would always say, it's about death and the desire for deathlessness. It's about death and the desire for deathlessness. And that's a really cool line. That's a really cool line. And so she starts talking about how Tolkien actually knew the guy who wrote Peter Pan, who's a writer named J.M. Barrie. Now, most of us, when we think about Peter Pan, we think about the Walt Disney version of Peter Pan, you know, Never Never Land, you know, the boy that, you know, Peter Pan will never grow up. And it was originally called The Deathless Boy Called Peter Pan. And the Peter Pan character first appeared in 1902 in a novel called The Little White Bird. And then it eventually became a stage play. So I'm sure that Peter Atkinson from The Merry Beggars here on Relevant Radio, I'm sure he knows all this. We should have him on to talk about this. But it eventually became a stage play, which I didn't realize. And then it eventually became more novels. And then obviously the Disney movie came out. Well, J.R.R. Tolkien, he knew about the guy who wrote Peter Pan, J.M. Barrie. And when Tolkien wrote this essay on fantasy stories, it was called On Fairy Stories, that's what they were known as at the time, he said that, you know what, the guy who wrote Peter Pan, he when he was writing about this stuff, he kind of really wasn't dealing with his own issues. So J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, he had a lot of stuff going on in his own life. And he's like, you know what? He didn't really grow up himself. He never really dealt with his issues. And that came out in the Peter Pan character. So J.R.R. Tolkien said, you know what? Children are meant to grow up and die, not to become Peter Pan, you know, and just never grow up. Children are meant to grow up and die. And so this idea that you'll never grow up, he said, that's actually a dreadful fate. You don't want that. You don't want that. And so this is really the phenomenon of arrested development. No, I'm not talking about the TV show Arrested Development, but Holly Ordway says, arrested development is a common response to trauma, and it can also be adopted as an avoidance behavior. And C.S. Lewis called it, he sort of related it to Peter Pan, this idea of arrested development, people that don't reach their full human potential. He called it Peter Pantheism, which is quite a phrase, Peter Pantheism, which is faith in the false power of eternal youth. Faith in the false power of eternal youth. You know, we all want eternal youth, right? That's why people use oil of Olay and things like that. You know, people want plastic surgery. They want all these skin creams and stuff. And some of it might work. I don't know. Make your skin softer, make it look more supple. But the idea is that you don't want to look old. You don't ever want to grow older. And the problem, according to Holly Ordway, is not the continued enjoyment of things that kids enjoy, like fantasy stories, but the refusal to grow up and accept the responsibilities of adulthood. And so C.S. Lewis said that arrested development is not refusing to lose old things, but in failing to add new things. So there's nothing wrong with like loving the movies that you loved as a kid or the fantasy stories that you liked as a kid. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is wrong to not add new things. It is wrong not to mature in other ways. And so this is really what The Lord of the Rings was all about. And J.R.R. Tolkien had his own issues going on too. And J.R.R. Tolkien, who passed away 48 years ago yesterday, both of his parents died before he was 12 years old. That imagine how tough that is for a kid to face. And then he served in World War I, which was the worst catastrophe that ever happened in human history, the Great War. And a lot of his writing was inspired by what he saw in World War One, some of the great tragedies. In fact, he was wounded and was in a hospital in late 1916 after the Battle of the Somme. And he wrote about his war experience in his fiction. So this is where some of his powerful scenes in The Lord of the Rings came from, actually. And this is something that Holly Ordway explains in her article. For example, the elves. Lucas, you know about the elves?
Only a little bit. It's okay, my shame. Right. I should know more.
I don't know either, but Holly Ordway knows about them. So the elves apparently are really about... The elves are like, they're not like Peter Pan in that they're perpetual youths, but they live forever in the prime of adulthood. And kind of like in World War One, what was happening was all these young men never came home again. They were killed, cut down in the prime of their youth. It was an incredible tragedy. And so this idea of the perpetual youth of Peter Pan, that really spoke to people during World War One times. And same with J.R.R. Tolkien's works. They really spoke to people, you know, who lived through, somehow got through World War One, World War Two. This idea that many young men would never grow old. So there's Peter Pan. There's also these elves in The Lord of the Rings, forever in their prime. And so this is Tolkien's take, and his experiences in the war really helped inform his writing on some of the stuff on death in The Lord of the Rings. And this idea that you'll live forever without dying, he says that this is actually not something that you'd really want. And so Gollum, right, the guy who gets the ring, you know, my precious, he gets this unnatural long life. And that's not exactly a good thing. He calls it a dreadful fate. A dreadful fate. This idea that you'll never grow up like Peter Pan, that you'll live forever. So you gotta get to death, and this is part of the idea here, that it's you're born to die, but after that there's something else. After that there's something else, and that is of course the resurrection. The resurrection, that is also huge in Tolkien's works. And in this essay that he wrote called On Fairy Stories About Fantasy Stuff, he talks again about the great escape, the escape from death. So this comes about in modern day comic books, in modern day fantasy stories. Superheroes, Superman does eventually come back from the dead after dying at the hands of Doomsday. The death of the mighty Thor, he dies saving other people. But then they come back. They come back to life. And Tolkien called this, there's actually a literary term for this. It's called a eucatastrophe. You've heard of a catastrophe, right? Well, this is called a eucatastrophe, which is a sudden and unexpected turn for the good, where everything flips over, everything flips on its head, and it brings joy. It brings joy, and it saves. And as Catholics, we actually celebrate the greatest eucatastrophe, the greatest unexpected turn for the good that brings joy. It's the resurrection of Jesus Christ after he died in this ultimate act of self-sacrifice, and then he's resurrected. He comes back to life. But this isn't a story. This actually happened in human history. It happened in our world. And so, as Tolkien explains it, the great story, this great turnabout, this great conquering of death that we all dream of doing, this actually entered history. It entered our primary world. This is real. And he said it this way. He said, quote, "Legend and history have met and fused, and the incarnation and the resurrection of Christ are the great eucatastrophe. Jesus stands victorious, saying, 'I died, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and Hades.'" And that's, of course, from the book of Revelation. So, and this is true, that there's so much historical evidence for the existence of Christ and for his death and resurrection. We've talked about this ad nauseum on my shows, on The Faith Explained, on this show as well. So this did happen in human history, and it's greater than any fantasy story that could ever be dreamed up. But this is real. This is real. And so what we ultimately long for in these fantastical tales, and we get these escapes, and again, it's fine to do that, because it points to the reality that we do need to get out of this problem of death. We do, and we can because of the death and resurrection of Christ. So I thought these are a couple of really cool articles from Matthew Heffron and also from Holly Ordway. So, hey, don't feel bad if you're going to check out a movie this weekend on this long weekend, because we're kind of hardwired to look for that defeat of the evil powers and the resurrection. And this is why it actually happened in our world. I'm Cale Clark. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back after this quick break.
This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It was the 3rd of September, that day I'll always remember. Yes, I will.
Keep it playing, Lucas.
It was the day that my daddy died.
I love that. The Temptations, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. Hey, another September song. Lucas found that one. I forgot about that one. I love The Temptations. Great band. Love Motown. Love all that stuff. It was the 3rd of September. Well, today is the 3rd of September. And it's also, for those of you who are turn to your liturgical calendar before you turn to the calendar app on your phone. Maybe there's a liturgical calendar app on your phone. You know that today is the feast day of St. Gregory the Great. Pope St. Gregory the Great, one of the greatest popes of all time. So anybody out there listening whose name is Greg, happy feast day. This is your day. Go have a donut. My brother-in-law, Greg, celebrate today. My best friend, Greg, have a great one, man. Enjoy it. Gregory the Great. Gregory the Great. And Bishop James Conley from Lincoln, Nebraska, wrote a really good piece on how he's a good saint for our time, too, because he showed courageous leadership during his day. And we need that kind of leadership in the troubling times in which we live. And it's amazing the similarities between what was going on in the church and in the world in St. Gregory the Great's time and what's going on today. So anyways, one thing that I'm going to share with you Bishop Conley's article. One of the things that he said was that St. Gregory, for anybody out there who's thinking about it, if you're a young man who's thinking about the priesthood and maybe God's calling you to this, ask St. Gregory to pray for you, because he's a good patron for a young man who wants to become a priest or is thinking about it. He really didn't want to be the Pope, by the way. I'll tell you about that in just a second. But he was the guy, by the way, that St. Gregory the Great came up with this line of this title of the Pope being Servus Servorum Dei in Latin, which means the servant of the servants of God. And that's great, because as Jesus said, you know, leadership means in the church means, you know, grabbing a towel and washing people's feet. It's servant leadership. It's not lording it over people, like what happens often in the secular world and what happened in Jesus's time as well. So the servant of the servants of God, it's kind of downward mobility. It's kind of like an upside down triangle. If you're at the top of the pyramid, well, guess what? That the whole thing gets flipped over and you just have more people to serve. So, and it's a beautiful title. And this has been used on papal documents ever since he coined that phrase. It's just great. Servants of the servants of God. And that's really what every priest is called to do. And we all have to do that, really. So if you're thinking about it, thinking about that vocation, ask St. Gregory for his heavenly prayers. And there's actually going to be a new biography of St. Gregory the Great that's coming out this fall. It's published by Ignatius Press, and it's called In the Eye of the Storm. And the author is Sigrid Grabner, In the Eye of the Storm. And so Bishop Conley from Nebraska was asked to review this book. He kind of got an advanced copy, and he started reading it, and he was like, wow, again, like, it's amazing how St. Gregory's times are similar to our own. So if you don't know about the life of St. Gregory the Great, he was born in the year 540 AD. His family was actually very wealthy, and it was a very very prominent socially, family in Rome. His father was a senator, was a Roman senator, and he was also the prefect of Rome, which is kind of like being the mayor of Rome. And so because of the fact that his family were people of means, he had the best of educations. So he studied grammar, he studied rhetoric. It's kind of like he went to Harvard, basically. Sciences, literature, and law. I wonder if there's an atheist chaplain at the time. No, just kidding. Reference to an earlier program. So he did really well in his studies. He was really bright. And so he himself kind of took after his dad and started rising through the ranks of government. And he became the mayor of Rome when he was 33 years old. St. Gregory the Great, the prefect of the city of Rome. He basically became the mayor. But it was not destined to last, his political career. And when he was born, he was born during what was known as the Plague of Justinian, which was a horrible disease that was sweeping the world at the time. And it was named after, imagine having a plague named after you. It was called the Plague of Justinian. It was actually named after the Emperor Justinian, who was the emperor of the Byzantine Empire. And he himself got sick. He got the plague. And it was named after him eventually. And he wasn't the only one who got it. It spread all across the empire. There was panic. There was chaos. People were getting sick. People were dying. They were in the ICUs of the day. Does that sound familiar to you at all? A worldwide pandemic. So huge portions of the population were wiped out by the Plague of Justinian. And there was a lot of damage left behind, physical, economic, damage to people's lives. And so he really kind of lived in this time period. And also, the other thing that happened at that time was the Goths invaded the Western Roman Empire. So the Visigoths, the Vandals, these aren't the Goths, by the way, that were in your local high school, you know, wearing the dark makeup and black clothing. No, these guys are way more dangerous. And Gregory's father eventually passed away. And this was like a real watershed moment in his life. So he decided to, you know what, I'm going to forego this political life and I'm going to live the life of a monk. He turned to God. So he converted the family home into a monastery and he began living as a monk and he loved it. He thought it was great. He wanted to just do that for the rest of his life, but he was so holy and he was so good at administration. Remember, he was kind of like the mayor of Rome that the church was like, you know what? You should be the Pope. And at the way the popes were elected at that time, they didn't have a conclave like we have today. The popes were actually elected by the people of Rome and the clergy. And after the pope died, people were like, I think Gregory should be the pope. And he's like, I don't want to be the pope. No way, man. Forget it. I just want to be a monk. I just want to pray. I just want to be in my little home monastery here, pray for the world. And they're like, no, you have the gifts to be the pope. We want you to be. So he was kind of made pope by acclamation. And he became pope in the year 590 AD. And he wrote all these letters saying, I don't want to be the pope. I don't want to be the pope. I just want to be a monk. And luckily for us, luckily for the church, he did accept this call from God. It reminds me a lot of Pope Benedict. When Pope Benedict was elected as pope, he did not want to be pope. He did not want to be pope. And he said that when he saw the way things are going in the conclave, and he thought, oh my goodness, like, I'm getting the votes, they're going to vote, I'm literally going to be pope. He did not want to be pope at all. Anybody who actually wants to be pope is probably insane, number one. Or that's the person you don't want to be pope, the person who's looking for it. It's kind of like the priest who wants to be the bishop for bad reasons, you know, I want the power or whatever. So Pope Benedict said, man, I felt like there was a guillotine that was about to come down on my neck. And he was like, I don't want this. But then he finally realized that God was calling him, that Jesus Christ wanted him to do this. Because he was planning on just kind of retiring back to Bavaria, maybe drinking some fine Bavarian wheat beer, as I hope to do this weekend, and write theology books. That's really what he wanted to do. He just wanted to kind of get back into his studies, because he's a very gifted scholar. And he knew that wasn't going to happen if he became pope. He had a lot of responsibilities. But he realized that this is what God wanted, so he did it. And the same thing happened with Pope Gregory. And so what he did was basically with you know, the Goths destroying the empire, the plague that had destroyed the empire, they needed to basically rebuild the church from scratch almost. He needed to revitalize the life of the church. And he did that in a lot of different ways. He did that in a lot of different ways. So here's some of the things that he did. Gregory the Great. He had a missionary heart, first of all. And even though Europe, and this is something that Bishop Conley points out in his article, much of Europe had been converted to Christianity already. They're all, you know, majority was Catholic, but that wasn't good enough for him. He didn't want people to be Sinos. Pope Gregory didn't want people to be Catholic in name only. He wanted people to know Jesus personally, to have this living relationship with Christ. He didn't just want them, you know, in the church in body, but not with their heart. So he sent St. Augustine of Canterbury to preach to the Anglo-Saxons in England, who were pagans at the time. So England was pagan, so he sent him on this missionary journey. And this is what Pope Gregory said about the English at the time. It's kind of a cool line. He said, "They are Angles," and by that he meant Anglo-Saxons, "they are Angles, but they could be angels if they were Christian." Now, he doesn't mean that they would actually become angels. We don't become angels. We're not angels, okay? More ways than one, right? We're humans. We're created in the image and likeness of God. We're going to be resurrected. We're never going to be angels, okay? We'll always have physical bodies, but except for, you know, the time in between. You know what I'm talking about. So I just thought it was a cool line. They are angels, but angels if they were Christian. he would have tweeted that out if he were alive today. So anyway, so he sent Augustine of Canterbury to evangelize the English. It worked. And then there were more missionary journeys to Germany, the Netherlands, and spread Catholicism there. So the missions, that was a huge focus of his papacy. Also, because he was such a great administrator, and I guess this kind of stemmed from the fact that his dad was the mayor of Rome. He was the mayor of Rome for a time. So he used his administrative gifts to create this like organized system of giving alms to the poor. And obviously he was really concerned, just as Jesus was, about the neglect of the widows, the orphans. And there was a ton of orphans and widows after the plague, the downtrodden. And so he really set up the system so that the church could more easily care for the poor. And also, obviously, being so greatly educated, he wrote a lot of stuff, which, you know, it's awesome that he left so many things behind. And now when Father Patrick Mary Briscoe was on recently talking about St. Dominic, in his new book on St. Dominic's way of life, one of the things we were talking about was that St. Dominic never left behind any writings. He left behind his way of life, the order of preachers, but we don't really have anything that he wrote. We don't even have his sermons, which is kind of weird, but we do have stuff from St. Gregory the Great. He wrote a ton of stuff on scripture. He wrote scriptural commentaries. The commentary he wrote on the book of Job is probably his most famous, according to Bishop Conley. He wrote a whole bunch of books about miracles and healings that happened through the saints and holy people, all kinds of stuff. And so really he's called Gregory the Great because he provided, Bishop Conley says, courageous leadership during troubling times, during times of great uncertainty, times of great suffering, times of great change. He was a great pope, and he provided great leadership. And because he was a pope who had the heart of a monk, He kind of had that approach to his own spiritual life. He knew that prayer, discipline, and silence, as Bishop Conley writes, would be necessary to get away from all the noise, the turmoil, the commotion of the world, while at the same time knowing that we have to live in the midst of the world. And I think that's a great line by Bishop Conley, and I think this is really where St. Gregory the Great can really connect to our own world, because it's much the same. There are a lot of the same types of crises are going on. So he had the heart of a monk, and so he lived that religious life, that monastic life. So he knew the value of prayer, discipline, and silence. But at the same time, he knew that we have to live in the middle of the world. And in that way, he's kind of a precursor to San Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, who said that we have to be contemplatives in the middle of the world, just like a religious, a nun or a monk will pray and contemplate and pray for the world, but they're kind of outside of the world. They're in the monastery. They're on the mountain. They provide a valuable role of praying for the world, leaving the world to pray for the world. But so they're still involved with the world. They just pray for the world. But we are in the middle of the world, and our cell, as St. Jose Maria said, our prayer room is the street. You know, it's Wall Street. It's the office. It's the cubicle. It's we're right in the mix. But we also need to have that. We need to have the silence. We need to have the prayer. And that, the silence part makes me think about Cardinal Seurat, who wrote that incredible book called The Power of Silence. The Power of Silence Amidst the Dictatorship of Noise. And there's so many great... I really encourage you to pick up that book by Cardinal Seurat. It's such a good book. It's so powerful. And there's a great... I'm just going to give you a couple of quotes from the book. It's really, really good. He says, quote, "Sounds and emotions detach us from ourselves, whereas silence always forces man to reflect upon his own life." And that's true. Like, if we get... We talked earlier about, you know, the entertainment stuff. There's so many distractions out there in the world, in the media world, in the digital world. But, you know, and these have a purpose. These escapes, you know, can be good, but not if it prevents us from getting alone with God from time to time. And so silence always forces us to reflect upon our own life. And he says about Jesus Christ, he says, Christ lived for 30 years in silence. And even during his public life, he withdrew to the desert to listen to and speak with his Father. The world vitally needs those who go off into the desert because God speaks in silence. God speaks in silence. You know, that's still a small voice, right? So there's so much. And I'll just give you one more because this is a really good one. He says, this is Cardinal Robert Seurat. He says, our world no longer hears God because it is constantly speaking at a devastating speed and volume in order to say nothing. That's pretty much all of social media, right? Our world no longer hears God because it's constantly speaking at a devastating speed and volume in order to say nothing. It's like Shakespeare, sound and fury signifying nothing. Goes on to say, modern civilization does not know how to be quiet. It holds forth an unending monologue. Postmodern society rejects the past and looks at the present as a cheap consumer object. It pictures the future in terms of an almost obsessive progress. Its dream, which has become a sad reality, will have been to lock silence away in a damp, dark dungeon. There is thus a dictatorship of speech, a dictatorship of verbal emphasis. In this theater of shadows, nothing is left but a purulent world of mechanical words, without perspective, without truth, and without foundation. Quite often, quote-unquote, truth is nothing more than the pure and misleading creation of the media, corroborated by fabricated images and testimonies. When that happens, the word of God fades away, inaccessible and inaudible. Postmodernity is an ongoing offense and aggression against the divine silence. From morning to evening, from evening to morning, silence no longer has any place at all. The noise tries to prevent God himself from speaking. In this hell of noise, man disintegrates and is lost. He's broken up into countless worries, fantasies, and fears. In order to get out of this depressing tunnel, he desperately awaits noise so that will bring him a few consolations. But noise is a deceptive, addictive, and false tranquilizer. The tragedy of our world is never better summed up than in the fury of senseless noise that stubbornly hates silence. This age detests the things that silence brings us into encounter with. Wonder, kneeling before God. Even in the schools, silence has disappeared. And yet, how can anyone study in the midst of noise? How can you read in noise? How can you train your intellect in noise? How can you structure your thought in the contours of your interior being in noise? How can you be open to the mystery of God, to spiritual values, and to our human greatness in continual turmoil? Contemplative silence is a fragile little flame in the middle of a raging ocean. The fire of silence is weak because it is bothersome to a busy world. End of quote. Wow. How powerful is that, huh? That's from Cardinal Robert Seurat from his book, The Power of Silence Against the Dictatorship of Noise. So this is really something that Pope Gregory the Great can remind us of too, that we really do need to be contemplatives in the middle of the world. We need to be in the middle of the world, but we have to remember the contemplative part too. And in order to hear God's voice in the middle of the street, you got to spend some time with him alone. So hopefully you'll be able to do that a little bit yourself on this long weekend as well. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Was I on key there? I don't know. What are you going to do this weekend? Are you going to go sing karaoke like I just did? I don't know. Hope you enjoy your long weekend. But wow, spend some time in prayer, though, for sure. Producer Lucas, that was that quote I read before the break from Cardinal Robert Sarah.
Oh, man. Dropping the hammer. I was just like, yes. So good.
That was straight fire. I'm telling you, that is amazing. So if you missed that, by all means, do download the podcast of this show later on, which you can get from relevantradio.com, the Relevant Radio app, or wherever you get your podcast. You know, hey, by the way, you know what else you can get from the Relevant Radio website for free? Just like all these podcasts are free, you can get another cool resource, which is Father Rocky's book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. I wonder if Jordan Peterson's going to sue him. Hey, you can't use 12 rules. That's my book. 12 Rules for Life, remember that one? Anyway, so Father Rocky's book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By, is now available for free, relevantradio.com/marriage. It'll tell you what to do before you get married, if you're called to that vocation, and what you should do after you get married. You can't just let yourself go, folks. You got to have a more stable, joy-filled, and long-lasting marital union. It's a really quick read, but there's lots of great stuff in there, practical tips. Father Rocky's talked to a lot of married couples. He's been in the confessional for years, if you add it all up together. So he's heard it all. He knows what's going on. Even though he's not married himself, he has more experience with marriage than many of us do because he's heard about all these other marriages and he knows what's going on. So trust me, this is a really practical book that's founded in the real world. You can get it for free, no shipping, no handling, but only for a limited time at relevantradio.com/marriage. We're going to go to the phones right now. Dee Dee is calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi, Mr. Clark.
Hello.
I don't have a question. It's well, I hope you don't turn red. I'm a student of Catholic theology.
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you something about you.
Oh,
and
okay.
I've never met you. I don't know what you look like, but that doesn't matter. I'm getting, my God, powerful theology 101. On Relevant Radio, and it's free. You blow my mind.
Oh,
that's all I can say.
Well, praise God. That's very kind. And yes, I am turning red. If you could see me right now, it's a good thing this is a radio show. And in terms of what I look like, they keep telling me I have a face made for radio. I don't know what that means, but
a girlfriend of mine, I think, does know what it's like. And all she could say was Bond, James Bond.
Oh my goodness! I'm beet red now. I think I'm turning purple now. But well, Dee Dee, that is very, very kind of you to say. And oh wow, I'm super humbled by that.
It's not kind. It doesn't come from kindness. it comes from my desire to learn more about my Catholic faith.
Yeah, and this is so great that we have Relevant Radio. We have the ability to get online or hop on the radio and learn about this stuff. And this is really what our mission is all about, bringing Christ to the world through the media. And we're kind of, as Father Rocky likes to say, we're competing with the big media organizations in the world that all want to kind of pump out a certain message. Well, we've got the best message of all. We've got the good news of Jesus Christ, and we're going to spread it, and we're super excited about it. And I'm so glad that you called in. I'm so happy that these shows are helpful to you, Dee Dee. And keep spreading the word, because, hey, the more the merrier, right? And it's a great family of all the radio listeners.
Of course.
Okay. And what are you doing this weekend, other than hopefully listening to more relevant radio podcasts? But got any big weekend plans?
Not the usual. Just the usual. Go to the gym.
Oh,
and trying to stay positive, hanging in there, as they say.
I love it. That's a rebuke to me. I need to hit the gym too. Believe me, I put on the COVID-19, if you will, at least 19, and I need to work on that, the body and the mind and the soul. That's what we try to do.
Yeah, the Holy Spirit is quoted as saying, "Fiercely for your body and your soul."
Mm. Yeah, it's the whole package, right? And hey, Dee Dee, I really appreciate that call. Thank you very much for cheering me up and lifting me up today, and I appreciate you. Thanks for listening.
Oh, thank you.
And call back anytime. That was Dee Dee calling from Phoenix, Arizona. I hope you have a great weekend, Dee Dee. Thanks for listening. And hey, one thing we always do here on the Cale Clark Show on Fridays, it's part of our Friday tradition, is producer Lucas, he collects the very best clips of the week and puts it into a nice little package for you, and it's called The Week That Was. Here it is. I recently cracked the magical 56,000 unread email barrier. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show. It is September now, and that was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
We could do a radio flash mob. Everybody who's listening to The Cale Clark Show, as soon as that song comes on, just start dancing wherever you are.
I'm a dad. I'll throw on the Crocs from going out, you know, to walk the dog or whatever, and I'll throw on the dad hat. But it's nice to know that this is actually, I'm now on the bleeding edge of culture as I do this. A voice that you're very familiar with when it comes to the family rosary, Sarah Tafoya.
Yeah, definitely don't give up. If your family rosary doesn't sound like what you're hearing or watching on the video, then you're in great company, because that's families across America are all in the same boat.
The late Father Raymond Brown, who is a very well-known biblical scholar, he said this, "When all is said and done, the combination of external and internal evidence associating the fourth gospel with John, the son of Zebedee, makes this the strongest hypothesis." Randy from Green Bay.
I had a bit of a falling out with the church, and I stopped going for a while. And, you know, I miss that. And I want to know, in your opinion, what's the best way for, you know, a guy like me to get back into the church?
The easiest thing to do is, is just go to confession, and you're right back in. With God's grace, you're right back in. And I think G.K. Chesterton said this when he was converting into the Catholic Church. He said, there's still a few issues that I didn't quite get, and I didn't quite understand. I kind of maybe disagreed with the church a little bit, but I gave Holy Mother Church the benefit of the doubt, because on every other issue, she was right. And I thought, well, you know, maybe the church, Holy Mother Church, is a little smarter than me, been around a little bit longer, has a little bit more wisdom. Maybe I'm not understanding things right. Maybe I just need to trust.
I appreciate all your help, and I'll be going to confession, like you said, and this has been, very helpful for me.
When I was deployed in Iraq, that was the first time I ever experienced the bells, during the Eucharistic prayer, and I was like, man, that's awesome.
The mystery of the liturgy, I think, is a draw for a lot of people. Say goodnight, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.
That was a great job, Producer Lucas. And for all of you out there listening, you have no idea how time-consuming it is to go through all the shows of the week and find material like that and stitch it all together. So that's an awesome service that you do for everybody. It's always fun every Friday. So thanks for that, Lucas. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, there was so much good content to choose from this week and some amazing calls. So if you missed any of the shows, definitely go to relevantradio.com/Cale and check them out.
You can kind of binge listen to them on the long weekend.
Yeah, when you're take going me to the in beach. Between your Marvel movie marathon.
Yeah, and so what are you doing this weekend, Lucas?
I'm actually going to go to the Purdue Oregon State football game down in West Lafayette. Yeah,
nice.
It's gonna be fun. Nice. College football kicking off this weekend, so I'm pretty excited about that.
That's, that's one of my favorite things about September. And by the way, just playing that song from Earth, Wind, and Fire, what a lady did tweet at me saying, hey, when you played that, I was literally dancing in my kitchen.
Yes.
And success. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's what we want.
I had that song stuck in my head literally all day after we played that on the show, and I was just like singing it to myself. My wife was like, "All right, you need to calm down over there."
It's an incredible song, and it never gets old. Some people might, well, by the end of the month, you might not be saying this, but it never gets old.
By September 30th, people might be calling in and complaining, stop playing this song. Yeah,
exactly. They'll be so thankful that it's October, but not yet. Well, speaking of October, October's very own, Drake came out with a new album in response to Kanye's album, I guess. I don't know.
Another Canadian.
See what happens with that. Yeah, another Canadian. Well, listen, Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. Have a blessed long weekend and Labor Day, everybody. God bless. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.